Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining Managing Challenging Resumes. Your host for today is Mr. Steve Neeson. Mr. Neeson, you may begin.
Thank you so much, Alma. Good evening, everyone. As Alma said, my name is Steve Neeson, and I'm the Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and I want to welcome everyone to the third call in our 2012 Employment Teleconference Series, Managing Challenging Resumes. The New York City Southern New York chapter would like to thank the Peter J. Sharp Foundation for their sponsorship of this program, and we would also like to thank Accorda for their sponsorship of the program. Joining me as your hosts on this evening's call is Barbara McKeon, who's the Director of Employment Programs and Services at the New York City Southern New York chapter, and Christina Forrester, who's the Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley chapter. Please know that this evening's call is going to be taped, and it will be made available to you at the end of the series. So for tonight's call, we're going to talk about managing challenging resumes. Your resume plays such an important role within your job search. Your resume is your opportunity to highlight your skills and experience, oftentimes needing to be done in two pages or less. From a basic job-seeking skills perspective, getting that next job starts with a strong resume. The goal of the resume is the interview. The goal of that interview is to get the job. So it all starts with the resume. Presenting yourself in the best way may be a challenge if you have had gaps in your work history or you have a wealth of experience and don't want to be seen as being overqualified. Our speakers tonight are going to share practical things you can do to your resume to present yourself in the best light. After our speakers have presented their presentations, there will be time for your questions. So please, if you do have questions, feel free to jot them down during the call so you're prepared to ask them during that Q&A period. Be sure to ask your questions completely, as we will be muting your line after your question is posed. This will allow us to get to as many questions as possible. We will do our best to get to all the questions, but if time does run out, Barbara, Christina, and I will give you our contact information so you can ask your questions to us, and we will do our best to get the answer. Also, at the conclusion of tonight's call, we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate tonight's program. This is a short survey of only 6 questions, so please, if possible, stay on the line until the conclusion of the program. We are definitely always looking to receive your feedback. So our speakers for tonight's call are Magda Moncrief and Joseph Durack. Magda Moncrief's most current employment was as a human resources generalist at Leaf Financial Corporation, located in Center City, Philadelphia. She previously worked as a human resources manager for a staffing company located in Princeton, New Jersey. She received her undergraduate degrees in human resources management and psychology from King's College in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and is currently pursuing an MBA from LaSalle University. She uses her human resources experience to assist clients with resume, cover letter, and job interview skills. Joseph Durack is the project director for the AARP Foundation Work Search Program, where he works on various employment and training projects and programs in New York City. He began his career with the AARP Foundation over 15 years ago. During his tenure there, Joe served on the executive committee of a local workforce investment board and has chaired a consortium of agencies which operated a county one-stop employment and training center. Joe holds a Bachelor of Science degree in industrial relations from Le Moyne College. Magda, I will turn the floor over to you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us on tonight's call. As previously mentioned, my name is Magda Moncrief, and I am a human resources professional. I have had several years' experience interviewing applicants of all levels of employment. This means that I have viewed hundreds, if not thousands, of resumes and cover letters. I hope to provide you with some information this evening that can assist you in getting past the screening process and into an interview with a human resources professional or hiring manager. First and foremost, address the issue of your lapse of employment head on. Now, this only applies if you are seeking employment directly following an employment gap. If the gap is in your past and you have found employment since, only address the issue if brought up by the interviewer. Mention it in the resume as well as the cover letter. But please know, most recruiter and HR people do not read cover letters, so it is essential to address employment gaps in your resume as well. When you do address it in your cover letter, have it be in one or two sentences max. If your lapse in employment was due to an illness affecting yourself or a family member, it can be listed on your resume with a description of attended to illness or family illness, or any other way you feel comfortable. You do not have to disclose your condition, or if you are a caregiver of a spouse or other family member, you may not want to disclose this either, and you do not have to. You can state the situation as a family illness that you had attended to and assure the interviewer that the situation is now resolved. Do not get into specifics and remain upbeat. If the interviewer or interviewers ask for more information than you would like to give, politely and professionally state that you would rather not discuss the topic in detail, but that you have plenty of other information that you would like to share. Not every hiring manager or HR person is correctly trained in what they can and can't ask you. Do not disclose anything that makes you feel uncomfortable. My next suggestion is to play up your positives. Any experience, your industry, function, anything else that you can that can highlight your career. Any contributions to the workforce prior to your gap of employment. Whether you were able to increase profits, decrease costs, train colleagues, or et cetera. Any accolades that you received from former managers. You can bring copies of former annual reviews or mention things that have been stated by former managers or peers. Have specific situations or feedback prepared to offer as examples. Another great tip is to maximize what you have done during that time period. Any volunteering, no matter how small, should be listed on your resume. Participation in walks, local school functions, various fundraising drives. If you were able to attend any classes or seminars, list that. Any consulting that you may have done, no matter how short term. Anything that you've been able to do in that time frame is relevant. If you are looking to enter the workforce now and are lacking these things, volunteering is a great way to build your resume. Look for something in your desired field or function and list it on your resume once you're involved. You can find a nonprofit or two that interests you and volunteer on a board or in any other way you can. The MS Society is a great example of this. There are so many different ways you can help. If you are lacking this, you can begin building volunteer experience now. It's never too late. The next great tip that I can suggest is to keep any associations active and any certifications current. If they have expired or lapsed, jump right back in. There are many free webinars and classes that various organizations and groups offer for its members. Take advantage of them. Keep yourself abreast of current topics affecting your field and briefly mention them in your cover letter or interview. Anything you can do to let the employer know that you are still in the game will assist you. A resume formatting tip that some of you may want to take advantage of is listing your employment history in years instead of months. But it's crucial to be consistent throughout your resume. And this really applies to people who have employment gaps that are short term. If you are out of work for a few months and you can save yourself from showing a gap on a resume by listing the time frame from that employer in years instead of months, you may be able to hide the fact that you have a gap until later in the interview process. But be aware, you do need to be consistent throughout your resume. For every employer, you need to list the time frame in the same way, in years and not months and years. But be aware, some hiring managers do not care for this method. But if you feel this would be beneficial, then do it. I, for example, worked with a director that preferred resumes that did not have their employment history listed in this way. If he had two close resumes and one individual had their employment history listed with months and years and another had just years, he would choose the months and years. But he was the only manager that I worked with that ever expressed this distaste of this method. So if this can work for you, you need to make the decision. One of the best suggestions that I can offer you is to build and maintain your network. There are many opportunities, such as the professional networking website LinkedIn, or local employment groups, such as those resources provided by your local chapter of the MS Society, or many others in your community. For example, I myself dealt with a lapse of employment. My cousin-in-law reached out to me and said, "Magda, when you're ready to go back to work, I have a recruiter that I've worked with who specializes in HR. Let me know when you're ready." When I was ready, I reached out to him, and he introduced us on LinkedIn to this recruiter. This was a step that definitely helped me because she was obviously more willing to work with me because she knew my cousin-in-law and had worked with him in the past. Also, former coworkers told me to contact them when I was ready to come back, and they would let me know of any opportunities that came their way. Obviously, you're closer to some coworkers than others, so I may have had a few of my coworkers' email addresses or phone numbers, but I maintained contact with a large number of them through websites like LinkedIn. And so when I was ready to go back, I was able to send them messages saying, "Hey, you know, do you know of any opportunities?" I didn't have to worry about losing contact with colleagues. And you always have a new opportunity to connect with someone on the website who you've lost touch with. Please take advantage of any and all opportunities that are offered. For example, the Delaware Valley chapter of the MS Society recently offered job readiness workshops this past summer. Many people took advantage of such topics as resume building, job hunting, networking, and computer skills. I know that several people used skills that they obtained in these workshops to assist them on their job searches, whether it was getting back into the field or switching careers. There are also many free webinars that you can take advantage of. And ask friends and family if they know anyone in the market who can assist you. They may work with someone. You may have a relative or a neighbor that may know someone who's looking to fill a position. And this also can be done on LinkedIn as well. And just an example I'd like to provide is a few years ago, I was attending a yoga class 2 times a week. I've always wanted to work at the Campbell Soup Company for some reason. I heard it's a great place to work. I noticed on our yoga email list that one of the women had a work email, and it was at campbellsoup.com. When I saw a position listed on their website in the Human Resources Department, I applied through their website, and I also reached out to this woman. We'd only spoken a few times, but I asked her, would she mind submitting my resume to someone that she knew, whether it be an HR or any other point person in the company? She was more than willing to help me. She wasn't sure if it would be of any help. She wasn't sure how high it would get, but it was an additional way into the company. So use whatever connections you can. Also, a friend of mine also went through an employment gap. She stated when asked what she did during that gap that she spent time looking for a position, networking, and taking courses. She was doing activities that would improve her contributions to her next employer. Specifically, she had a certification to maintain in human resources. She took courses and obtained credits for her recertification. So if there's anything you can do that can help maximize your time You can downplay your employment gap. You may not even have to bring up an illness. Another great source to enlist in your job search are previous supervisors, employers, and coworkers. They may know of part-time, temporary, or consulting opportunities. This may be within their current organizations, or they may know of any additional positions at other organizations. It may not be ideal to you, but it shows an employer, a potential employer, that someone else is willing to bring you on after a lapse of employment, and they help quell any doubts that they may have. My friend, who I previously mentioned, received consulting and temp offers from previous coworkers who had moved on to other companies. She took them up on their offers and worked with these people. One position she accepted was for up to a year and helped build her resume back to where she needed it to be. So don't forget your former coworkers. Also, don't make excuses during your interview or phone screen. State the situation and then focus on the future and be positive. Focus on what you can bring to the employer, your special skill set. You may state that it was unfortunate that you were out of the workforce for that period of time, but end with your excitement of getting back into your field. Don't let a discussion on the topic of your employment gap get you down. You want the interviewer to remember your excitement and positivity. Also, please remember that many thousands, if not millions, of people are dealing with employment gaps at this time in their resumes. Some are due to illness, and others are just due to the recession. So please do not feel like the lone fish in the pond. There are many things in your employment history that can help a recruiter or hiring manager overlook the lapse in your work history, but it's your job to make them leave with a lasting impression of you and your skill set. Thank you very much for your time, and good luck in your job searches. I look forward to your questions later.
Thanks so much, Magda. Joe?
Sure. I'm Joe Durack with the AARP Foundation Work Search, and for those of you familiar with AARP, you might get a guess that I work with older adults that are looking to enter or re-enter, in many cases, the workforce. And we do a lot, of course, with resumes. It was kind of pointed out earlier. You know, I often get the question, is my resume good, and how is this resume? And usually I answer that question with the question, are you getting interviews? And if the answer is yes, then I say you probably have a pretty good interview. And as the handouts that we distributed, there's many different types of resumes and formats you can use with a resume. For older adults, typically, and depending again on your work history, we may recommend the functional resume as opposed to the chronological. And that can somewhat, and I thank Magda for her very good information on pointing out some of the, things that resumes and also moving on to interviews that you need to do. But writing a winning resume is very important because, again, that resume is what gets you the interview, and then the interview is where you really have a chance to meet someone face-to-face and convince them you're the best person for that job. I think beginning a resume, and we have kind of this AARP approach, if you would, to job search, and we kind of borrow the acronym AARP and use the first letter A instead of for the American Association of Retired Persons, we put the first A as assessment. And I think that's a really important part of the process, particularly when you're developing your resume. You really need to assess your skills, your interests, your personal characteristics, and all those things that make you up, because what you're going to have to be able to do is translate that into a document, if you would, that's going to be attractive to an employer who may want to hire you. And so that's really key that you take the time initially to do that assessment. Some of the must-dos for a resume, you should tailor your resume to the specific job you're applying for. Don't send the same resume to hundreds of employers. The good thing with technology anymore is you can kind of customize it or have a targeted resume for a specific job or specific industry that you're going into. Keep it brief. Normally a maximum of 2 pages for a resume is, the absolute max. You don't need a historical document of 5, 6, 7 pages. And for older people, we usually tell them somewhere between 10 to 15 years of work history is the most that you're going to want. Anything beyond that is considered ancient history from the standpoint of an employer. You obviously want to proofread it several times. One typo can send your resume to the trash. Always include a cover letter with the resume is a good idea. There's different, elements of the resume we're pointing out, the contact information, the brief statement of your key experience and strength and work experience that's relevant to the job which you're applying for. Obviously, you want to talk about your skills areas, expertise, and specific accomplishments. And I'd underline accomplishments in that regard because accomplishments are different than just a job description. You don't want your resume to be just kind of a job description of what you've done. You really want to talk about specific accomplishments. So accomplishments are those abilities, duties, or strengths. And abilities, they're different than those. In fact, they're what you've done for the company. What have you done in your prior work history that has made you stand out? What contributions have you made to the employer? And accomplishments are, on one hand, show the specific actions you've taken in a particular situation, the skills and abilities you used to meet a challenge, the results or outcomes you achieved. You want to write down these accomplishments because they're going to be key in developing your resume. Before you start writing your resume, you draw up the list of these accomplishments. You won't use the same ones in every resume, so you have some in reserve for different types of positions. Because, again, remember that targeted or customized resume. You can develop a resume, and as you get, let's say, an advertisement for a job or a job order, you see, you want to look at that and say, okay, what are they looking for? What is this ideal position? What skills do I have that I could bring to that company? Don't forget that your volunteer work and education can also be counted as accomplishments as long as they are related to the job that you want to do. To jog your memory about accomplishments, ask yourself kinds of questions. Have I accomplished more with the same or fewer resources? Have I received any awards, special recognition, et cetera? What and why? Have I increased efficiency? Have I accomplished something for the first time? Have I prepared original papers, reports, and articles, managed a work group, managed a budget, identified problems others didn't see, developed a new system or procedure, have been promoted or upgraded? And so sometimes, we have to take that time, again, in this assessment process to write down these accomplishments well before we even begin to put that resume onto paper. You want to summarize your accomplishments, and try the challenge actions results approach, CAR for short, they call it. Again, the challenge was, what was the pre-existing problem or the need in the situation? Then what action that you took to accomplish it? Be specific. You can also include any obstacles you overcame, any skills you demonstrated, and then the results. What was the result of the actions you took? Something like achieved 20% increase in productivity. Those kinds of, that's specific in many cases with some accomplishments. Customer satisfaction improved by 32% or something like along those lines. If you identify specifics, that'll make those accomplishments much more meaningful to an employer. And then, of course, they'll want to ask you probably more about that at the interview, so be prepared to tell how you brought these accomplishments about. So how to measure your accomplishments? You're going to use numbers whenever you can. Money saved, decreased cost, achieving more with less. The best numbers are, of course, in dollars for many employers. If it's not possible to give a dollar amount, use other measures. Examples, number of people affected, amount of time saved, percent increases in subscriptions or traffic, percent reduction in customer complaints, those kinds of things. And if you can't quantify, use words like significantly or substantially, as long as this is true. You got to be factual and true in your reporting in the resume. So, for example, for a job in customer relations, it might be something like, well, develop communication strategy to respond to customers regarding a new 150-item product list, resulting in a 20% decrease in the number of returned orders. For a job managing computer operations, it might be initiated or implemented a strategy for consolidating computer operations from three centers to two, saving $200,000 without interrupting processing. For, let's say, an outreach job with your local senior center, initiated a neighborhood watch program covering a seven-block area, recruited over 50 volunteers, scheduled shifts, and publicized the effort to the local paper. Crime dropped over 20% in the first 6 months. You can see by these that they're specific. There's numbers and measurable items that can be added in there and really sound a lot more than just, increased productivity. There's some real specifics there. You're telling them how much and how you did that. For a job, let's say, you want these accomplishments to be interwoven in throughout the resume. And as Magda pointed out, you want to be consistent in your formatting. So if you decide, I'm going to use the chronological resume, then, of course, the resume works well for a person with several years of relevant experience. And by presenting your career information by dates, beginning with your present most recent position, the employers will easily see the job history you've had. Now, that works well if you have that steady work history, but let's say you don't, then you may want to go to the functional resume, which is going to really focus in more on the experience rather than the dates of that experience. So you'll list the various accomplishments, the work, different types of work experience you have, and then at the end of the resume, you'll just list the last couple of companies, say, that you've worked for, and that would be by, as Magda pointed out, either by date or by month, so it would be consistent, but be consistent when you're doing that. So with the resume, I think it's really important to keep in mind that the resume is a dynamic document. It's one that is a living document, and the sooner that you accept the fact, the better it is. This means that, it's flexible in changing times and needs, therefore it always requires a few modifications here and there. Great way to do that, of course, is have maybe a couple of resumes that you have on your computer that you can tweak or adjust to a particular job that you're applying for. And if in many cases, maybe you are looking at more than one particular position to apply for. So you don't want to have, just one standard resume that you've made 200 copies of and send that out to an employer. That's not, how we do resumes anymore. You want to be able to take that resume and modify it or customize it to the particular position. Of course, the good thing with the modern technology, that's fairly simple to do anymore. And, of course, a lot of times the resumes could very well be done online, and they're going to ask for those things. So you'll be, attaching either the resume as an attachment to an email, or you may be filling out some sort of an online application and including it there. Some tips for success might be, tailor each resume, always create a fresh resume for each job application. Use keywords. Speak the employer's language by using all relevant keywords from the job posting to show that your skills are a good match. So when you get a job posting, you browse that, you see what's in there, what are they looking for, then you can get an idea what your customized resume is going to look like for that particular employer. Use dates. Always cite dates of employment. Employers tend to dislike resumes that give few or no dates, which is a danger in a functional resume. So even though we kind of recommend the functional resume for older adults, at the same time, we're not saying take out all the dates, but we're going to list those dates at the very back of the resume. And just as a matter of fact, these are the dates, and again, probably only going back 10 to 15 years. So it may be worked with IBM for, 2011 to 2010, and just list those chronologically in the back. But as you see on the format for a functional resume, what you're really highlighting is the experiences. And what's nice about that, and I get this question often, is that what if I have skills that go back, let's say, more than 10 or 15 years? For those of us that have been around a while, we may be wanting to go back. And that's fine as long as those skills are still current and relevant and you want to use them. And that's really easy to do in the functional resume. You can bring those skills into play. And as long as you, feel comfortable proceeding with that and telling an employer about your skill sets and that, then you can do that. Focus on the results, as was mentioned. Stress your actual accomplishments, not job duties or character traits. For example, instead of just saying you're a team player, describe something you accomplished on the job by using your team skills. And when sending online resumes, pay attention to the requirements. For example, some sites may accept only a chronological format, in which case you don't want to go ahead and send the wrong format in. There, you can find more free information. It was pointed out, you know, a lot of times you can go to your local one-stop employment center. In New York, they, you know, they call them Workforce One or one-stop centers. You can go there and get quite a lot of free information on that. Sometimes they'll even help you prepare the resumes. But you can also find some free information on resumes, including numerous examples at career websites such as quintcareers.com. That's Q-U-I-N-T, we'll see careers.com, or Susan Ireland's resume site. She also has a free tutorial on how to upload and email your resume. And then one website, of course, a word from our sponsor, aarpworksearch.org. We have what we call there the Work Search Information Network. And it's really, it's kind of an evolving site, but it's very robust, has a lot of great information in regards to not only resume writing, but interview techniques, job search techniques and skills, and or just a wealth of information about different things. There's some video content on there and really good, useful information. We even have an online assessment tool and a job referral tool from there. So you can go on there, type in a particular job, it'll link you to like a job search aggregator such as Indeed or, you know, one of the other sites we have at AARP, and then that will be able to, you'll actually be able to do a job search there and identify companies who you might want to send your resume to. So there's a really a lot of information out there, and a lot that you can get, of course, on the internet anymore. So, you know, the beauty of technology, and in particular the internet, is even though, yes, it's changed the way we do job search, and I believe Magda, you know, talked about the power of some of the social networking tools such as LinkedIn. You know, those are great sites. There's even a, on our website, you know, how to do that kind of tutorial there that you can look at. So there's different ways of doing job search now that perhaps if you haven't done job search in some time, the way we go about searching for a job is quite a bit changed. And that's kind of thing. It is a dynamic process anymore. You have to really be able to develop new skills, try new things out, expect that things have changed, and yet not be afraid of accepting, embracing that change and moving on. And if you do, you know, the chances are you will be successful there. Again, with the, I talked a little bit about that AARP acronym that we borrowed for a job search, which we call kind of the focused job search. So the first A was assessment. The second A is alternatives. So once you've done your assessment about pretty much who you are by looking at your skill sets, your interests, your characteristics, then you move on and come up with some alternatives. And for any folks that are looking at going into perhaps a second career or a different career than what they've had, because maybe in some cases the jobs they've been doing for the last 10 years aren't there anymore and they have to, by necessity, look elsewhere. Or some other folks maybe just looking at using this opportunity where they're not employed now to try something new. You know, the accountant who I'll talk to will come in and say, well, you know, what have you been doing? Well, I've been an accountant for the last 15 years. Well, what do you want to do now? Well, anything but accounting. So in some cases, you have people that are making career changes at a choice, or some more out of necessity. But in either case, you can get a good sense of what's out there and develop a resume using what we call the transferable skills that you may have. I had to do that myself because I'm on my, believe it or not, my second or they're probably the third career now. But, you know, we're coming from a military background. I had come out and I had to be able to transfer skills that I had gotten in the military that, you know, take those skills that were transferable, such as communication, management, leadership, transfer them to the civilian world. And, you know, that takes a little bit of time to identify, but believe me, there's skills that you have when you take a kind of a holistic approach to yourself and do take the time to do that assessment that you'll identify. And you'll say, yeah, I could use those skills in another industry or another occupation. So that assessment is key. Then the alternatives, the R stands for responsibility. You got to take responsibility for your own job search. You can have as great a network as you want, and then we encourage you to use networking in this process, because it's very, very important that you tap into the unadvertised job market, which the only way you can really do that is to network. And Magnet kind of talked about an example using some of the social networking tools out there. Some of that you do on your own. It's not always, you know, what you know, but who you know. And so you have to be able to do that networking piece. And so, you know, the resume is going to help in that regard as well. But ultimately, you take responsibility for your own job search, realizing that if you're looking for a full-time job, you're going to have to look full-time for that. It'll probably be a full-time effort. And then the P is for the plan. You want to come up with a plan. And everybody's got their own different plan, perhaps. Sometimes that plan incorporates getting new skills, going back to school, perhaps, getting a certificate or a certification that you need to move on to perhaps a different industry. Maybe you decide, well, I need to move into healthcare because that's a demand occupation and it probably will be for the foreseeable future. Or maybe you just say, you know, I need to get the latest computer software package here for this particular program because I'm not competitive. I have some obsolescent skills that I need to get up to speed before I'll be competitive in today's job market. So their plan may be individual for, you know, each of us, and we should write that down. It doesn't have to be in concrete, but we want to write it down and have a plan. And it's, you know, it can be changed and modified as we go along, but we come up with a plan, we put it in writing, and we proceed. So again, assessment, alternatives, the responsibility, and then the plan. And you put it all together and you have a focused job search, and hopefully your resume then will become your, you know, your card to help you get those interviews that you need to so that you can move on and get the job that you're looking for. So that's pretty much. I would encourage you again to look at some of the websites that we have. The Work Search Information Network site is great. And if there's any questions, we'll be able to hopefully answer them for you. So thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, Joe. Alma, I think we're ready for some questions and answers now.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if there's any questions that you would like to ask, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, if there's any questions that you would like to ask, press the number 1 key on your phone. Our first question is from Christine. Go ahead, Christine.
Yes, I have a bachelor's degree in a different field, and that was from 20 years ago. And I recently went back to school and finished a bachelor's degree in a different field. And I'm not sure about putting the dates on just one of them, because I don't want to indicate my age, or do I leave the dates off both? Which way would I go with that?
Is that for me? Let me try that.
Yeah, so I think that one would be more appropriate for you to take.
For me,
Magna?
To take?
Yeah.
Magna?
Joe? My suggestion, and Joe may have a different opinion that he can share, if it depends on which degree pertains to the position you're applying for. So if you feel like the first degree that you achieved really has no context in what you're attempting to do in your new career, then I would think perhaps leave it off and then to put the more relevant degree. But also, you can definitely put both, and then you can leave the date off of it. You can just put, you know, the degree you received and those institutions as well as their locations, and don't assign a time frame. Only when you need to fill out a job application, would you probably need to do that?
Yeah, and I'd agree with that exactly. I mean, I think if you're, depending again on what job you're going for, if the first degree is not, you know, really relevant for the job you're seeking, then you probably just leave it off. But if you think that degree plus your new degree are going to be useful in the job that you're applying for currently, then you'd want to include them both. But I would leave off probably the dates, just so you don't You don't need the dates. If you're going to use the current one and it's a recent date, you might want to do that kind of and leave that date in. But you want to be, as I think Magda pointed out, consistent. So I would just leave off, if you were concerned about particularly the age of how long ago you got your degree, just leave them off. And if you want to include both, if you don't want to include both and you're just going to go with the one, since that's fairly recent, just put that one on with the date.
Our next question is from Jane. Jane, go ahead.
Hi, this question is for Alma. I'm a 20-year ICU RN, and now I've had a 2-year gap. And so my question is, how is that something that I can cover? Because that's a pretty substantial gap. And though I'm recovering quite well and I intend to stay within medicine, I don't know how to cover that gap. And the other thing is, definitely within the medical field, I've found in 20 years, you definitely cannot disclose your MS. It's every time it's come out with wherever I've been, it has bitten me badly.
My suggestion would be, I'm assuming that all licenses would be current and active when you are looking to go back to work. I would do whatever I could to maintain the relevance of your knowledge. So if you can take any classes or attend any classes that would assist you so that your training is the most up-to-date in whatever concentration you are looking for, I think that would be the best way so that you can show your potential employers that I haven't worked for a while, but I still know what I need to, and I'm very aware of what's going on and I'm very knowledgeable on what I need to know. I don't know if Joe has any suggestions either.
Yeah, the gaps are always difficult to deal with, but I think, on the hand of theory, if you can cover that truthfully there and explain the best you can those gaps, that's about all you can do. It was pointed out in some cases when you have gaps, any volunteer work that you're doing can kind of fill in those gaps as well sometimes. And again, remember on a resume, we don't put things like salary information or any of that. So if you were doing something during that time frame, that can somehow fill out the gaps. But otherwise, sometimes inevitably we see more and more commonly now people that have gaps in resumes, and you just have to, I think, be truthful when you're dealing with those dates and explain it to employers. Most, I think, employers that can understand that situation.
And primarily, if you can do any volunteer work in the medical field, I don't know what would apply to you as an RN, but, something in the Ronald McDonald House or any charitable organizations where you're assisting in the medical field, I think that could only help you.
Our next question is from Joseph. Joseph, go ahead.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the seminar, and I'm appreciative of the MS Society and what you guys do. One theme here for me, I've been out of the workplace for 7 years, and one of the things that I'm trying to get back into, obviously I'm on the seminar to get back into the workplace, but how has it changed? Because I know my experience from when I was diagnosed, what took place, and now what has transpired in the workplace to make it more favorable to the folks with MS. Can either of you folks share? We're doing the resumes, and at least as I remember, not much has changed as far as the theory behind doing a resume. But I think, at least for me, it's getting back into the game. So how have companies have changed? I work for corporate America. I work for Fortune 25 companies. I've been out of touch. And for me, some of my angst is about not just identifying, like you said, in the resume skills and putting that together, but then how does that integrate with where the rest of the people are? coming out of being out of an employment gap of 7 years. Can you share any insight, please? Thanks.
Sure.
Well, I think it was pointed out earlier, too, that a lot of people do have gaps right now, so that's more and more common in the thing. As far as what the changes go, I think probably if it's been 7 years, you'll see that, you know, the technology has really changed a lot in terms of the way we kind of do resumes anymore as well. So, you know, obviously a lot more is done electronically and posting your resume and using some of the social networking tools. I think you'll find that a big, big change in terms of the way the resumes are put out and how the job search process goes. I think that's probably the most significant thing. You know, but in terms of probably the formats themselves and things, they really haven't all changed that much. It's just the way we you know, disseminate resumes, I think, has changed more, and the way we network certainly has changed considerably in the last 7 years.
Yeah, I agree. If you can somehow, I don't know how savvy you are with technology or if it's something that you struggle with, but if you can somehow make yourself comfortable, if you aren't, with technology and social media, I think that would definitely assist you. A huge change with, I mean, it's not huge because it was on its way 7 years ago as well, but, you know, as Joe said, the way in which we apply for positions. So you may have applied for a position, but then now it's all done mostly through organizations' websites. So you don't even know if your resume is going to be seen. There are still opportunities if you know someone within a company to physically hand your resume to someone, and they will physically hand it to, you know, a hiring manager or HR personnel. But that is becoming more and more rare. So if you can somehow, you know, increase your knowledge of that and make sure you're comfortable with it, then I think that would only be, that would only benefit you, and just, you know, assist in your job search.
Our next question is from Deidre. Deidre, go ahead.
Yes, I'm looking over the documents that you all forwarded to us and also in the discussion that you said. I was wondering, when you're presenting your resume, is there something specific in terms of how you're supposed to give the resume to them? Should we definitely do it in a PDF, do it in a Word, text, just some guidelines to make sure that it's viewed? And I know that sometimes they're using those scanning programs, and does it make a difference how you present your resume or send it to the company? Thank you.
I think in terms of, if you're emailing it directly to a person within the organization or to an email address, I would send it in a Word document. And if you have a cover letter, include your cover letter as body in the text of an email rather than an attachment, although you could do both. So if you copy and paste your cover letter into an email as well as attach your resume in a Word document, it does not matter too much whether it's a PDF or a Word, but I think it's usually more attractive if it's in a Word document. But sometimes you're not even given that option because many organizations have their own website now where you just submit it and upload your resume. So the formatting isn't always the best when you do that either, but you really don't have much control over that. So just looks-wise, you know, I mean, a PDF is fine as well, but I think, you know, the best bet is to attach it as Word. If you can keep from faxing or doing any of that, I would try to refrain from that.
Yeah, I'd agree as well. I think an attached Word document probably is the way to go in most cases. And, you know, a PDF would be fine as an attachment, and then probably, like I said, transmit it by email with incorporating the cover letter into the email body itself. But you know, it's probably less of, because again, sometimes you'll have to remember, look at what they're asking for and the way they want the resume sent to them. I would say that, again, your familiarity with technology becomes key, because a lot of times companies do now, they just want them online. And in fact, sometimes that's the only way they even advertise the positions anymore. And that's partially by design. I mean, we have a lot of companies that we deal with, and a lot of them have gone, you know, to online applications only. And part of that is so they can say, well, we never saw the person. We can't be accused of discrimination. But also it's just they're wanting to see, do you know how to, you know, use technology anymore? Because technology is so key, at least, you know, the basic computer skills and familiarity with any job almost across, you know, the industries, whatever. It's one of those kind of transferable skills you got to have. And part of the way you transmit your resume, you know, if you're faxing it or mailing it out, it's, you know, it's really not not sending the message that, and many times they won't even ask for you to do that.
Oh, and also, I just have something quick to add. If you're responding to an ad on a job site like Monster or Career Builder, and you don't apply through the organization's website, but you're sending an email to, you know, an inbox for the HR department or for jobs, pay attention to the job posting. Sometimes at the bottom of the job posting, it'll say, please reference code, you know, JB0010. And, you know, I know from experience, at times you are posting so many different positions and looking for so many different, to fill so many different positions that you know, you have to code the different positions and then you reference them by number. And so when people respond, you know, to those different positions, if you use that code, it says two things. You know, one, it helps the HR person differentiate, but also it shows the HR person that you pay attention to detail and you can take instruction. So I can't tell you how many times I said, you know, well, let's see how many people paid attention to the email, and probably only a quarter. So that will definitely say something for you if there is something in the email or in the job posting that says, please reference job code, you know, example. So, you know, that's just a little tidbit I thought I'd add.
Our next question is from Claire. Claire, go ahead.
Thank you. I worked for a large international computer company for over 32 years before retiring in 2010, and I'm now looking to get back into the workforce, but in a different field. My question has to do with my resume and the education portion. I have a very old associate's degree. My associate's degree states it's an associate in science, data processing, business accounting technology. Data processing is a very outdated term. When I list my degree on my resume, do I use the words as they appear on my diploma, or do I use the updated terms? In other words, do I say I have an associate's degree in information technology? Thank you.
I was just going to suggest that I wouldn't change the wording, because then you can be accused of, you know, trying to mislead an interviewer. But perhaps you could use a tool, something like, you know, associates, you know, science associates, or, you know, whatever type it was, and then just put the college rather than go specifically into what type it was. And then at least if you can get into the interview without that being asked, and then during the interview with this, then you can address it. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that as well. I mean, I think the key thing is that you've got the associate degree or what have you. I wouldn't change the terminology too much, because then, like you say, you're running into credibility issues there if in fact it comes out, well, you know, you had produced the degree or something. But just, you know, associate's degree from where you got it from, and if it was in the general field of business, then that would be fine without going, if you don't want to use the term, for example, data processing. I had a degree in industrial relations, which, you know, business would be fine. It would cover the same kind of thing. But, I mean, if that's what the degree was in, leave it in that, but just put the bachelor's of science and then the name of the school and the general category.
I think we may have time, Alma, for just one more question.
Yes, sir. Our final question is from Lorraine. Lorraine, go ahead.
Hi. I originally had a different question, but now since I listened to all you guys, this is my question. You said that we don't, on our resumes, of course, we don't put like if we're ill or nothing like that. And what happens when we're given these resumes and then we get an interview and then an interviewer finds out that we do have this illness? Isn't that kind of deceptive? You know, that's my fear. It's like, should they know ahead of time before an interview, or, you know, do we wait to the interview? I'm kind of scared because it's, to me, it seems kind of deceptive, even though it's, you know, we know it's not deceptive, but maybe to them, they would think of it as deceptive. And of course, you know, once a person thinks that you're deceptive, they're not really going to look highly on you at all.
My suggestion, you know, would be to refer to it as a family illness. I mean, it's not, to me, it's not being deceptive, and I'm in human resources. And I think any HR person or hiring manager would understand that you would not want to disclose it, you know, once they find out. That's why I said not to delve into it too much, because I feel that many people will feel nervous and feel like they're being deceptive if they have to speak about it too long. And then you kind of are weaving this web where, you know, you might start saying things you regret. So my recommendation, and Joe may have things to add, is to just refer to it as a family illness that you had to attend to, whether it was yourself or someone else. You know, you were affected by this family illness, you had to attend to it, but it is resolved. And you are ready to enter the workforce. That's not deceptive. And whether or not it's going to happen again in the future, you don't know. And why should you prepare an employer for that if you're not sure if that's going to happen? I wouldn't sell yourself short.
Yeah, and I'd agree. I mean, the resume, again, that's to get you the interview. You want to put your best foot forward. We're not saying be dishonest, but, you know, quite frankly, you don't. Omissions in this case are not really dishonest. You don't have to list all your barriers or any of your barriers to employment. And you certainly don't have to list any ailments or illnesses that you suffer from or whatever. You're going to be putting forward a document that's there to hopefully, like an advertising document, get enough interest for them to call and talk to you in person. And then during the course of that interview, and even there, you still don't have to disclose all that information. But if the question comes up, you can, you know, you answer truthfully. But it's not a requirement on a resume to list everything, you know, and we have the same thing, whether it be illness, it's the same thing with age. Is it deceptive to not list the year I graduated from high school? I don't think so. Who cares?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So that's not really, in my mind, deceptive. You graduated from high school. That's fine. That's not being deceptive. You don't have to tell them the year. It's not relevant. And it's only going to be a discriminator to keep you from getting the interview. And you don't want that.
Well, thank you both so much for taking so many questions this evening. I think obviously it's a true sign that this was a topic that was very much close to a lot of people. Barbara, Christina, and I did want to give our contact information, as I'm sure that there were some questions that we couldn't get to. So, Barbara, do you want to start?
Sure. If you need some additional information and you didn't get your question answered this evening, you can contact me at bmckeon, that's bmckeon, at msnyc.org.
Christina?
Hi, and my email address is christina.forster, that's christina.forster, S as in Frank, O-R, S as in Sam, T-E-R, at nmss.org.
Great. And my contact information is steve.nissen, it's N as in Nancy, I-S-S-E-N, at nmss.org. And also I'll give you my phone number, which is 202-296-5363. And again, if you do have any further questions that we didn't get to tonight, feel free to contact any of us, and we will do our best to get them answered. If you could stay on the line for just a couple more minutes, we do have those six quick polling questions, but just wanted to thank Magda and Joe again for joining us this evening and sharing your experience and your expertise on this topic. So thank you so much.
And just a reminder quickly, we have three more calls coming up. One's on career change called Reinvent Yourself. The other one is what employers want from home-based employment, home-based employers. And the final call is don't do it alone.
Limit resources. Yep.
Limit resources.
And those next calls will be taking place every other Thursday for the next 6 Thursdays. So there's still time for you to sign up for those programs.
Okay, Alma.
Yes, ma'am.
We're ready for the survey.
Polling?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, this begins our polling session. Our first question, are you currently working? Press the number 1 key on your phone for yes. Press 2 for no. One moment. The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question, how would you rate the speakers? Press 1 for excellent, press 2 for good, press 3 for fair, press 4 for poor. Again, how would you rate the speakers? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, 4 for poor. The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our third question, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, 4 for poor. Again, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. As a result of this teleconference, I learned practical changes to make to my resume to minimize gaps in work history in order to improve my chances of getting an interview. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I learned practical changes to make to my resume to minimize gaps in work history in order to improve my chances of getting an interview. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. As a result of this teleconference, I gained clarification into the different types of resumes. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. As a result of this teleconference, I gained clarification into the different types of resumes. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our final question. Final question. As a result of this teleconference, I intend to revise and update my resume using the information I learned tonight. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, 3 for disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I intend to revise and update my resume using the information I learned tonight. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your polling session.